Hey, welcome everybody. Today you are listening to Pop Sub, which is with myself, Christopher Furman, and my compadre, James Fryer. And we're just here to kind of talk about what's new this week in entertainment and media, but not necessarily. This week, we're going to talk about a show we've seen that caught our eye.
Hey, Christopher, how you doing?
Good morning, James.
You okay, man? Anyway, I saw this great show that we're going to talk about now. I think you've seen it as well.
Yes.
That's why we're here talking about it.
Yes, yes.
It's called Forged in Fire. It's on the History Channel. You can also find it on Netflix and who knows where else. You know, these streaming days we have these days. I never thought I would get into this show. How did you get into it, Christopher?
Well, so what we do is we're pandemic home on Saturdays a lot. And so what we do a lot is we'll eat dinner together, regular, that's normal, but now we do lunches together on Saturday. And so what happens is my wife will make like something simple like grilled cheese sandwiches, and we sit and we watch these Netflix shows. And we don't do it every Saturday, but most Saturdays we do. And my youngest son, he says to me, actually says to the whole family, hey, you got to check out this show, Forged in Fire. And I was thinking it was going to be like one of these animation shows. I'm like, no. We're watching reality shows on the Saturday. That's our thing. We're not going to be watching anime. I'm so sick of anime. And then I'm watching the show and I'm like, oh my gosh, the show is so great. This is awesome. Describe how you found it, James.
Well, the funny thing was it was similar for me. My son and I were eating lunch, and he eats a lot faster than I do. And we were just watching The Simpsons, and I'm not done with lunch by the time The Simpsons is over. So I'm still there, and I just want to watch something dumb for a few minutes so we can sit there and watch something while I'm finishing. And actually, Netflix recommends this to me, and I never would have clicked on that. But he said, yeah, we'll watch that. And I think we'll just watch it for a few minutes, and we probably won't even finish the episode. But, you know, here I am a few minutes later, done my lunch. I was like, okay, I guess we can stop now. And son's like, nope. We're watching this. Okay. That really surprised me. He's not much of a maker. I actually am quite a, have a background as being a quote, a maker. And then so we watched it and now we're hooked on it. I don't know. We've watched probably 8 to 10, maybe a dozen episodes by now. So it's a bit of a surprise.
But yeah, we don't binge watch at our house like that, but it's hard for me to turn it off. Like, so we'll watch one episode.
Oh no.
I say, hey, do you guys want to watch the second episode? And everybody's like, yeah. And so we watch a second one and then,
oh no, I do not condone binge watching.
We try to restrain it to 2 episodes. So really quick, we should at least describe what the show is, James.
Yes. That's what I was leading into.
Do tell.
It's a reality show, as Christopher mentioned, and it's a competition between 4 or more, usually 4 blacksmiths. Yes, it's a blacksmithing reality TV show. So they get 4 new contestants each week, and they have a big shop which is well supplied with all kinds of different metalworking tools, well, forging tools really. And so there's a round 1 where they all try to make in a 3-hour time limit. Actually, I guess it's a 5 to 6 hour time limit, but the first round is just taking a lump of steel, or sometimes disassembling a car and getting the steel from a car or a pinball machine or something crazy like
sometimes
that.
Sometimes they're nice though and give them real steel. Sometimes. Sometimes.
Yeah, but then they usually throw it. It becomes harder though. If they start with a, like, oh, here's a pinball machine, dismantle it and use the metal from it. They usually follow up with and make your signature, quote, your signature blade, which means, you know, make whatever feel comfortable making. It just has to be 12 inches long or something like that. Whereas if they start off with steel, they say, okay, yeah, we're giving you this nice blank pieces of steel, but you have to make this really complicated blade or something like that. So, you never get a free
lunch. No, and you can watch the show over and over again. So like just a couple of days ago, I was watching the 100th episode and everybody went there assuming that they were going to be using recycled materials. And they said, today we're going to give you some steel and we're going to ask you to do an exact replica of a Bowie knife. And I thought, oh, it's Bowie, right? An exact replica of a Bowie knife.
Bowie or Bowie. I think it depends on, yeah, I think you actually said it right.
Well,
right.
Well, it's so funny. Okay, it's Bowie knife versus Bowie knife. I've always called it a Bowie knife, like David Bowie. And then they, on the show, they called it Bowie. Yeah.
Bowie.
So I don't, is it interchangeable?
Well, I don't know. There probably is a correct pronunciation, but it probably indicates where you're from. Like there's Bowie and Bowie. And I don't know. There was something else. How did you say it the first time though?
Is no, I said Bowie. Come on. And then I've heard Booyah. And I've heard it called Bowie before too. And maybe who knows? Anyways, so they're asked to make this replica of this knife. And I'm like, and you can see the expressions on their face like, we didn't come here for that. Anyways.
But the premise of the show is, as I said, I didn't think I'd find this interesting, but it's very stressful to take raw steel or, you know, have to dismember an old truck to get your steel out of it and have only 3 hours to make it into a billet. And then to make it into a knife, an actual functional knife,
because
they test these things in phase two.
Well, their faces almost burn off sometimes.
Well, in phase one, I've never seen anything but knives, because you can't really do a sword. I mean, you could maybe do a short sword.
Well, I thought the first episode, and I could remember right, but didn't they make a samurai sword? I could have sworn they made a samurai sword.
I don't know if, I don't remember, I haven't seen that episode, and I don't think they could have done that in round one, especially, well, I mean, if you want to do a traditional katana, that would be even more difficult because, well, there's a lot to that one.
Pretty complicated.
So that's the interesting part. So they don't have to, not only do they have to make these knives, they have to make them functional. So they have to harden them to the point where they can retain an edge, because they test them. They take these knives out of round one that they make, and then they stab things.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's the exciting part of it. That's the exciting part of this whole episode is that, so first of all, you have these guys and there's just fire everywhere. Their faces look like I saw several times their faces look like they were going to burn off. And then next thing you know, after they get this semi-assembled knife, well, there's a few exceptions where they're beautiful knives. Then they start stabbing like pigs, you know, they call them carcass. Okay, we're going to test this on a pig carcass. And,
that's the less pleasant part of the episode. I don't know why they have to use pig carcasses, but occasionally they
have this military bus. It looks like a military version of a human being so that you can learn exactly what a weapon will do. So then they test these weapons where they're stabbing the liver and they're trying to crack open the cranium of these things. And it's lifelike in the fact that blood comes pouring out, their skulls crack, chunks come off. It's insane.
Yeah,
it's over the top.
It's a little over the top, in my opinion. You don't need to go quite that far, but you know, the other part of the show is you've got four contestants, and then you have four judges who range from, you know, military guys, like a historical, an historian who specializes in historical weapons. And you have this great, I don't remember his name, Doug Mercata, I think it was, who's
he is about the edge.
And he's the one who does a lot of the testing. So they have to make a knife that can withstand, you know, getting hit against a piece of solid oak or an oil barrel. And then after they do that testing, the durability testing, they have to make sure that it still holds an edge so they can cut something really finely, like a carpet or something.
These judges are real people. So you got like Will Willis, who's the host, who's actually an Army Ranger, right? And then you have these other guys that are like, you got the Green Beret guy, Grady. You know, you have this other guy, Nelson, who's like a sword expert. I mean, that's what he does for a living. He just looks, and then, but they do the Hollywood end too. So they got this guy that's on there once in a while, most shows, David Baker, and he's like basically a Hollywood prop maker.
Well, he's a historian though too. I mean, the reason Hollywood goes to him is because he has a specialty in military historical military,
right,
gear.
Yeah. Anyways, they got interesting judges. So the judges are interesting because you see them cringe.
Well, you just skipped over the best guy, Doug Mercata. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but he's the edge specialist, the edged weapon specialist who does a lot of the testing. He doesn't do all the testing, but he does the most.
Yeah, he's the one that does all the over the top stuff. And what does everybody, so James, what does everybody on the show want Doug to say about their blade?
This is an interesting point. I didn't know this until I read it up, but initially he said after he tests the weapon and if it passes his test and is satisfactory, he said it would kill.
Right. He says that.
But he rephrased that. And now he's got his own technical term for it. It's not kill anymore. It's kill. And it stands for, I can't remember what it stands for, but it, you know, instead of kill, it's everyone gets out alive or something like that. So it's kind of a weird little, they wanted to be more family friendly. So he stopped saying kill and started saying
kill. I didn't realize that. That was their way of making it family friendly.
Aside. Well, I don't think you have to realize it.
He always does it with a smile. And then,
because if you want to,
Always does it with a smile and looks over his brow. So you're not sure if he's like, yeah, this kills. Or he's saying, hey, it kills. Lucky you, big guy.
Well, yeah, sometimes he's pretty close.
Now, there's not very many women on this show.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't seen very many. Of course, there aren't that many little guys either. I mean, you have to have a certain amount of force and power to be able to wield a hammer over and over.
That's true.
One of the guys shows like one of his, okay. So the second half of the show is that, so the first part of the show is a couple different tests and they weed out two of the contestants. So they're left with two finalists. And this is very interesting because they give them a very specific challenge, which is usually very difficult, a very ornate sword or something very technically complicated. But these guys are then allowed to go to their, quote, home forges, their own shops at wherever they live, and make this.
Some of the most interesting
stage in their own shop for five days.
Some of the most interesting part of the show, because first you have this whole very contrived situation where they're being filmed. Everything's probably, I'm guessing, because I've done some reality shows before, they're somewhat scripted. And then if somebody says something wrong, they just ask them to say it again. That's how they do on these reality shows. But when you're out there on your own turf, it's raw. It's really raw.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that things can go wrong in the home forge, but things always go wrong when they're doing it in the first stage in the studio forges, because again you have 3 hours to do the blade and then you have another 2 hours to finish it. But that 3 hour section, you've got to get the blade basically working.
Yeah, there's no getting around that section.
And steel is not always your friend. The steel, you can be working away with a perfect technique and still wind up with a crack that winds up destroying your blade. So these guys are
absolutely under the gun. So you have to talk about this axe episode, the Viking axe episode.
I'm sorry you haven't gotten a chance to see this, because this is now probably my favorite episode. The season one, episode three. And it seems like not the most exciting final weapon to build, but they build a Viking axe, which is, you know, mostly a stick, a long stick with an axe on the end of it. You know, doing katana.
Oh, yeah. We should caveat that some of these knives, it's all about the handle, right? It's not always just about the steel, because if you can't wield the steel with a decent handle, you can lose the competition.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to digress for just a minute. One of my favorite stories from this, I don't remember which episode it was. There was one guy who was being a little bit overly pious. He was very religious, and every other word out of his mouth was, God bless this, or I'm praying for that, or whatever. Some people, I have no problem with people being pious. I respect people who have deeply held beliefs. But, you know, sometimes people use it kind of like a tool for bullying, and I felt like this guy was doing it. So the ultimate, I think, irony was he wound up putting two crosses on the pommel, on the handle of his final piece, to make it as decoration. Those little crosses wound up cutting the judge's hand, and they threw him out because of that.
I'll tell you, I've seen a couple episodes where
I thought that was just
come on,
icing on the cake. Go home, buddy. Go home.
I don't think I'm not going to go there with the crosses, but.
No, I'm not. I'm not being.
Oh, it's being about pious.
I'm just saying that, you know, like I said. Yeah, it's overly pious. It's like outwardly. It's like he can't stop talking about it.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. There's quite a few episodes where people's hands, the judges I'm talking about here, get cut. And you're right, that pisses them off. If you cut a judge's hand, goodbye.
Yeah, and rightly so, because you can't use a weapon that hurts you more than it hurts your
component, right?
Viking Axe didn't seem like it was going to be that exciting of an episode. And the first round was going pretty well. There was one guy called Ryu who was having a hard time because he was, I guess I need to explain that in this modern blacksmithing shop that they have that they're using in the studio, they have like power hammers, which are machines that are literally just automatic hammers. Probably a couple of tons. Yeah, well, automatic. You just hold this, you push the steel into the machine and it hammers it for you, which is amazing. No, Ryu wasn't having any of that. He's a traditionalist and he was hammering everything by hand, which is insane because you just don't have enough
time.
That's
part of it, right? You got to know your time.
He almost fainted. He nearly fainted halfway through. So he had to take like a 10-minute break while everyone else is hammering away. He's off in the back because he's overworked himself so hard. So he comes back and he wins round one. He winds up coming back and making an amazing blade. It's really impressive. And then stage two, when we go to the people's home forges, my mind is blown because the guy who's up against had a pretty good rig, setup. It wasn't great, but I've seen better and I've seen worse. He had a real shop with four walls and a roof and a forge and all the tools you could generally want for blacksmithing. Not Ryu.
Like you see, like at some like county fair or something.
This was actually in a shop. He had a very nice shop space. Not Ryu. Ryu had a backyard. In the middle of his backyard, he set up a cast iron pan. And if you're thinking cast iron pan, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about some kind of weird thing that you've never seen before. Think of a cast iron pan, maybe a little larger than you're used to and maybe a little bit taller than you're used to seeing, but it's literally a cast iron pan with a crack in it. So it's literally garbage that he's using as his forge. He's got a hole drilled into the bottom of this forge and there's a pipe feeding into that hole. At the end of that pipe is duct taped onto that pipe a hairdryer, which is forcing air through the pipe into the bottom of the forge. And that feeds oxygen into this homemade forge. And that's what gets him. So he's burning charcoal, and otherwise charcoal wouldn't be able to get up to the heat that you need it to get up to without the additional air. And he's got an anvil and a hammer, and that's about it. I am blown away. This is the most basic forging setup I've ever seen. I don't, you go back to the medieval England, they would have more complicated forge setups than this. This is the most basic forge setup you can possibly have. I'm amazed at how well he does with that. Except the only problem is the axe head, which isn't that big, is still too big for his forge. So he winds up taking a satellite dish, an old beat up satellite dish, and putting it under his forge and trying to make it a little bigger because it wasn't big enough. So he's got his cast iron pan in the middle of a big satellite dish, and that's how he forged his piece. And did he win? Well, that's up to you to see. You'll have to watch the episode to find out. I don't want to spoil it. Come on, it's very exciting.
Well, like I said before, I love the raw stuff. When I see stuff inspires me like, hey, maybe I could do it in my backyard. But the judges
that's
are
the thing. I mean, as I said, there are such a variation in home shops. You look at these home shops, it's like, oh my gosh, this is like $100,000 to $200,000 worth of equipment in a beautiful shed. So, you can't get started in this. This guy's out in his backyard with some literally junk parts, an old beat up hair dryer, and a cracked pan. That's all you need. Well, and some charcoal. I guess you need some charcoal and an anvil and a hammer. Seems like it's a pretty low barrier, low entry point.
You got to think about the judges too on this. They're probably looking at this stuff and they're thinking, okay, we got two knives that are halfway decent. Which one should I choose? Should I choose the guy with the bet? Well, I should say, rarely at the show, when you get to the very end, after all those crazy tests we just talked about, do you rarely say to yourself, oh, I wonder who the winner is? You know who the winner is going to be. It's not really debatable. But I just love the show and I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it today.
Yeah, like I said, a surprise show for me. I didn't think I'd be interested in it, but I'm going to give it a thumb up. You know what? I'm going to give it two thumbs up because I can't know who's going to stop me.
All right, so I'm going to give it a thumb up also, and I'm going to give it two thumbs up.
Four thumbs up.
And so we got four thumbs. All right, so for those of you that want to see about our four thumbs up, you can see our ratings for pop culture on our website. Also, James and I are on another podcast, if you get a chance to listen, called Heatstroke Podcast, which is kind of fun. We talk about just random things that are going on, maybe in the news, maybe not. Yep. All right, James, I'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Hey, Christopher, good talking to you again. See you next week. Bye.
PopSub Podcast has been brought to you by Marcus in Motion. For more information, go to PopSubPodcast.com. To contact PopSub Podcast, go to info@PopSubPodcast. Thank you.
Is it gonna last with the freaky cast? Wonder where I'm